Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us today. As we roll on, some good news and some bad news. Now you're saying to yourself, "Is the good news is you're quitting?" No. Sorry. Didn't want to dash anybody's hopes there. The good news is the suit, after being in the hospital, is home. So we are glad to hear that the suit is well enough now to be home.
Should we have
some great news.
Breaking news sounder or something?
No. We're just glad he's home and he's doing better. So that's good news. And the bad news is my brother can't make it to the game this week. Yeah, I was kind of bummed about that. He got a hold of me today and I was like, so I was kind of bummed about that. So, okay. You know? But there's good reason for that as to why he's not, so. But he will be on the show Friday. He has turned into a cult hero, a cult hit on this show, I think. And he is way ahead picking games. I mean, way ahead. I mean, it's going to the point now where I know they're having discussions with me. We had to have Steve on as the guest and have Kev host the show. I hope that's just a joke. All right. We're scheduled at Ben Jones, StateCollege.com on the show today. Eventually going to get Johnny Holiday on the show this week, too. John and I talked last week, and I got to text him tonight. Because, you know, Johnny also does a lot of stuff with the Washington Nationals radio network. And they got playoff games coming up with the Dodgers coming up. I'm also in the middle of reading a book right now. Kurt Smith, and I'm going to try and get Kurt Smith. We've had Kurt Smith on the show before. Kurt Smith has written many books on baseball announcers. So I got Kurt's original book, Voices of the Game, which to me is one of those sportscasting Bible books. I read that thing, go, man, that's really good. But then when Fenway Park hit 100, Kurt then wrote a book on the lineage of Red Sox announcers, which I read cover to cover. Well, the latest book I bought from him is on Vin Scully. And I think he wrote the only biography of Vin Scully. And there's a few reasons I'm reading is. Number one, of course, I'm interested in the topic. Scully's remarkable career, longevity. But the number of times that I have referenced in my class over the last dozen years, Vin Scully, discussing his approach, his professionalism, taking no game for granted. Oh, yeah, the Braves were obviously great for years, especially when they had the triumphant of Tom Glavine, John Smoltz, Greg Maddux on the mound. They were tremendous. They were great. And they won a World Series, and they got the postseason time year after year after year. Well, right now the Braves are in dire straits at the moment. Well, just because the Dodgers are going to play a series with the Braves, does that mean that Vin Scully now takes the game for granted? Oh, yeah, it's only a series with the Braves. No, he goes out there with stories and is entertaining and research on the Dodgers and research on the Braves and gets it done. And I've cited him many times in my class that every is do not sit there and ever take any game in front of you for granted. Don't go in with preconceived notions about what you're going to see. Go in there completely prepared for any eventuality, because for the next how many hours, you're on talking about this. So you better be really good at what you're doing no matter what, because you never know what's going to happen, and you never know who's going to be listening along the way. Your job, even if it's one listener, is to give them a great broadcast because they deserve it, because they took the time to listen to you. And that's what Scully does. You know, they're facing the Diamondbacks. It's Socrates Brito comes to the plate. He's got an entire repertoire put together on Socrates and Plato, which I had the privilege of reading a little bit of about 2 weeks ago when I did a feature on Haley Washington of the women's volleyball team. She loves to read. She's a voracious reader. And so we did the interview with her at the Stacks at the library down on the bottom floor. And in that basement floor is where Socrates and Plato happened to be, the works of Socrates and Plato. And I sat there and I read some of it before, you know, as we were going along and waiting to do an interview, because she had a photo shoot going on at the same time. I found it to be fascinating. And that's what he does. You know, if you're not constantly doing research in these jobs, always working with it. You know, you need time off. You want, you know, family time, play golf, things like that. Like, I got, you know, believe me. I went out last night. I played a round of golf. Okay. Saturday night and Sunday, you know, it was grandchildren day here at the ballpark. All right. We had a great time. So you have to have time to do all of that. But if it comes time to lock in on your job, lock in on it and don't take any game for granted. You don't know what you're going to get. And he is a testament to doing over 9,000 games in his career, of having each one of the 9,000 done in such a way where each one on that particular night, when you're doing it, it's the single most important thing you're doing. There's no such thing as only. And that really is in any phase of life. There's no such thing as only. Well, it's only the Tuesday show on WKOK. No, this is right now the show I'm doing. I think I hear Bob in the background there.
I'm here.
And if the B-man is there, then we got to be on our game.
No question.
Maybe because, I mean, he's on the verge of taking over the show anyway, so I got to be on my game. Okay, got to be on my game. But there's no such thing as only. You never walk into, for example, I mean, how many, what do we do here? 250 shows a year here? Something like that?
Yeah.
250. I mean, between the Phillies, whatever, if you get knocked off. I mean, I only take a week off a year anyway. So let's say we do 250. So now we're headed in. So now we've done, obviously, over 1,000 shows. We've done over 1,000 shows because, you know, we're finishing up our fifth year now. So we're past the 4.5 year mark, okay? And the first week of February, we'll hit 5 years being on the air. So we've done over 1,000 shows on WKOK. I can honestly tell you, I haven't taken a single show off where it's like, okay, let's just get this through. Let's just get it over with. No. If you're on the air at that time, that's the single most important thing you're doing at that moment. And if you don't do that, if young broadcasters don't understand that, then they're not going to be able to succeed, advance, or above all, gain the single most important thing that you can garner in doing this, and that's respect. It's not about the world loves you. Oh, they love you. Well, that's great, but do they respect you? Now, you can have both. Maybe Bob's a testament to that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Steve, the one thing that you share with Vin Scully, among many others, is I think it's important that you prepare for the game yourself. Don't rely on others.
You know what? There are services now, Bob, that, because I've been contacted many times by them, by services.
Sure.
Hey, we'll put together your spot charts. And I've seen them. And the spot charts that they've put together, they've sent me examples. They've sent me, I'm not going to get into names of people that use it because there's a long list of people that use them. And there are a few guys in the Big Ten that use them, okay? It's a great service. You know, I see all the information they put on there, how they go about it. It's really great. Now, part of it, too, is this is also done, you know, for the spotter that works with people. Well, as you know, Bob, I don't have a spotter.
No.
I'm just saying.
No, you
I'm just
don't.
Saying, right, I don't have a spotter. That's not, and believe me, I'm not bragging. All I'm doing is just being matter of fact here,
right.
Please, okay? It's not like I don't have a spotter. It's like I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, in other words, you know, so I make my own chart. And for everything, when I sit there and I do baseball during the course of the week, I'll get in there and I'm writing down all the little things under each guy's name that I think is something I'd like to bring up during the course of the game. What round he was drafted in, a family member that may have played with him before, maybe a little quick story about what they did in the Cape Cod League. You know, something that maybe one of the players for the Spikes had mentioned to me that I'd like to get into the broadcast tonight. Something like that. When I do football, you know, I spent Sunday, I mentioned it was Grandchild Day. Before that, it was also Maryland Day and Lawn Day. All right. So, you know, so I sat there and I put together everything statistically on that chart that I think is going to help me and that I'll need. And, what do I know about Edmonds, who transferred from Virginia Tech? What did he do at Virginia Tech? Is there something that may open the door for me? Teldrick Morgan, what did he do at New Mexico State before he transferred into Maryland? The two transfers in the secondary happened to be both JC transfers. Well, actually, one was in Florida, got hurt, never played it down in Florida, transferred in. The other guy's a JC transfer. But these are all things that you're trying to get together where none of it may make the broadcast. None of it. Because of all the stuff that you prepare, first of all, the game and the tapestry that is in front of you that you're trying to paint as you're going along in conjunction with the great work of Jack Ham and obviously Jeff and Raj and Derek and so forth, all right, that you're doing takes precedent. You may only use 1% to 2% of what you prepared, but the 1% to 2% changes every game. Same thing in basketball. I do a lot of work on every single guy, and I'm talking like work on guys that, you know what, guess what, tonight's a blowout game one way or the other. Okay, this guy's playing in his third game this season. What do I know about him? It's my job to know something about him if he gets in. All right, it may seem insignificant, but if it's part of the game, it's part of the game. And again, that 1% to 2% that you use changes every game, but at least you've got it there in case you need it. I mean, in other words, when let me give you one. Irvin Charles became the ninth. It is the ninth time in the history of Penn State football there's been a touchdown pass of 80 yards or better. Now, for years, that has been sitting on my chart at 8. Which means it's been on there every single week, right? And then finally, when it happened, I had it.
And Steve, I was listening to it, and those words flew out of your mouth as Mr. Charles was like crossing the goal line. It was that.
Right.
And I'm thinking, knowing you as well as I do, where did that come from? And then I said, the chart.
Because it's on there. There's certain things on there. For example, I've got on there, on the chart, what's Penn State's last safety? What's Penn State's last block punt for a touchdown? What's Penn State's last block punt? What's Penn State's last block field goal? I mean, I've got all this on there that's there if I need it, right? And it sits. Sometimes it sits there. What's Penn State's last 200-yard rushing game? What's Penn State's last 200-yard receiver? It's all on there. I mean, in like minute things. What's the last time Penn State returned a conversion for 2 points the other way? And it's Lee Rubin in 1992. It was against Pitt. It was on a blocked extra point. But again, it's there. not to impress the world, but somebody might be wondering. So if they're wondering, at least you have an answer. And that's what you try to do. If they're wondering, at least you've got an answer.
And in football, with 22 players on the field at all times, you have to have a lot of contingencies ready to go, I would think.
Oh, you have to always. And in basketball, what's Penn State's, what's the last guy to get 30 points in a game for Penn State? When did it occur against who? Well, Shep Garner against Boston College. But, you know, when did it happen? I mean, most of these things I end up memorizing for whatever reason, so I don't have to look at it. But if I need it, it's there. All right? Because you want to be able, in the moment, when people are looking and might be wondering, hey, this is great, great. That's some point. Hey, I wonder when the last time that happened. Ah, okay, they know. And so that's why you do this. It may be time-consuming. It might be tedious. But it goes back to the philosophy of the great actor Sir Laurence Olivier. And, of course, Bob, and you and I know who Olivier happens to be. Younger people would not know.
Chad's them, scratching his head here, Steve, know, on that one.
To them, it's Larry Oliver. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the great actor Sir Laurence Olivier was not only a great film actor, but in particular was an incredible theatrical actor. You put him on a stage, he was brilliant. And he was asked, what are the keys to success? And he said, there are two keys. You have to have the humility to prepare and the confidence to pull it off. And in this business, those are words to live by. All right. We will come back with more philosophy in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, I've enjoyed sharing my day with all of you for years now, and I appreciate all of you sharing your day with me very, very much. So Bob Buhner is sharing his day with me today because he's a hostage, so it's great to have him with us.
They let me out on work release at 5 p.m. Steve,
and
I want
to... By the way, Chad, great to have you here. Sean will be back on Friday, but Chad, doing a great job. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Steve, right. I was amazed at the last segment. I just realized that you were able to combine Vince Scully, Jack Ham, Plato, Socrates, and Sir Laurence Olivier in the same concept. I don't know that anyone's been able to do that in broadcast history. I have it on my little notes here.
Well, I mean, if Lawrence can pull that off, then I become really impressed. And the most important one of that group to me is Ham.
Yes.
Okay. I think Scully's brilliant. Obviously, Plato and Socrates, incredible. Olivier was a tremendous artist. But guess what? Ham and I go out there on Saturday together. He's the most important guy on that list.
No question. And you'll have to tell Jack who you compared him to.
Oh, believe me. We will talk tomorrow, and when we do, I will mention that in the listing of Plato, Socrates, Olivier, and Scully, Ham finished first.
And if he doesn't believe it, he can listen to the podcast.
Don't you think he suffered enough? Ben Jones, StateCollege.com, next half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
That was a brutal brutal commentary there on the Lawrence promo.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, no offense, but I bought my land from a realtor. I don't...
Yeah.
You know, it seemed legal.
Yeah. Poor Ben Reichle. Right. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. All right, this day in sports history... The first professional contract was signed in 1893 by Grant Dilbert of the Pittsburgh Athletic Club. And in 1895, the first U.S. Open golf tournament took place in Newport, Rhode Island. Horace Rollins, 19 years of age, won the championship. 1959, first World Series played west of St. Louis began in Los Angeles. And yes, Vin Scully announced that. Let's see. 1987, NFL owners used replacement players to play games despite the players' strike. That worked really well. 2001, Barry Bonds hit his 70th homer of the season to tie Mark McGwire's major league record. All right, let's bring in Ben Jones, StateCollege.com, Penn State and Maryland coming up Saturday. Ben, welcome back. It is great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Steve. And I got to say, I wish that I could just write Imani as his first name and his last name, because Lord knows that's quite a mouthful to say and remember how to spell, that's for sure.
Yeah. I've asked him enough times just to make sure. So, I mean, literally, whenever I get into, I always want to make sure with the players, so I will pull them aside and ask them, you know, how do you say that? And I'll get, Barkley. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, I thought we were going to be in the clear after Stephen Obang Ajapong was gone, but here we are again.
No, we're not. First of all, let's get to what did you think? Sometimes it's not just winning, it's how you win. What did you think about how they won on Saturday?
I think they won in a way that is the sort of the best way to win for a team like this. I think that when you are maybe coming out of a game like they won they had against Michigan where your confidence is down a little bit, you have a first half like they did against Minnesota where, maybe a little banged up, a little beat up, a little bit in the rain, just not quite all on the same page. And then I think to go into the second half to score, a bunch of points in the third quarter to start clicking, to get momentum, to have that last, minute drive to tie the game, to go into overtime to win it. I think that kind of thing, that whole sequence of events is the sort of thing that can turn your season around. And certainly, I think this Maryland game is going to be a tough test for Penn State, but I think when you look at a season and a moment where a win can sort of turn things around, I think, certainly Penn State has played well at times, but I think to go out and win a game like that, I think it shows a lot of character and a lot of heart, so to speak, and I think that's the sort of thing that, that really is better for a program than going out and winning, by a touchdown in regulation and just sort of walking off the field saying, I'm glad it's not raining anymore.
We've now had a body of work of five games out of Trace McSorley. What have you seen in his development?
I think it's the little things that have been the good part of his development. I think that, one week he works on something, he's stepping up into the pocket. Another week he works on maybe some of the downfield balls. I think he's a guy that's always had the leadership qualities and sort of just the mental fortitude to be a starting quarterback. I don't think anyone's questioned that, but I think when you look at the little aspects of his game that he's improved, I think the footwork has gotten better. I think his balls down the field have gotten better. I think stuff like that, just some of his pocket awareness has gotten better, because for as much as Penn State's offensive line has resulted in some of those sacks and some of those fumbles, there's little things that he can do to sort of get out of the way of those strip sacks, learning when he can just take the ball and run. And I think he's done better and better at those things. And that really just comes with time and experience. So it's certainly, he's made good strides forward. But, also at the same time, I think that he came into this year more than well prepared to do the job that he's done so far.
I know it's a play, but what did that one touchdown play in overtime, the way it was blocked for Barkley, what does it tell you about maybe some steps forward on that offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of those guys, their ability to get to the second level, Ryan Bates had a really good block on that play, and I think I had gone down to the field level for overtime to just sort of take it all in, because it's always an interesting vantage point, especially, when they do win it in overtime, to see the reaction and what have you. But I think the blocking, like you said, on that play, Bates has got a good block, all their guys field off well, and I think it's a big moment for that line, because they had struggled, and they've struggled at times to really block for Barkley. I think everyone sort of jokes about how Saquon Barkley can make a 1 yard loss look like a 15 yard gain. And I think, some of that is certainly to his credit, but some of those situations have been because, the line has gotten blown up at times. So I think when you have a play, a 25 yard run in overtime when the line needs the block, it gets the block. So I think that sort of thing is a big confidence boost. And when you talk to guys after the game, Ryan Bates especially, who has not played a lot of football for Penn State, to be able to say, I know we've had these up and down moments, but look at what we were able to do in a crunch time at an opportunity to win a game. We were able to do it. And I think, that sort of thing can work wonders down the road as you try and build that confidence and build that experience.
Now, they also did not, I don't think they committed an offensive penalty in the game either, which is important. They weren't giving away yards. And we've talked in the show earlier about the number of guys. I mean, in the Georgia game, the biggest play is not the fact that Georgia kid catches the touchdown. He takes his helmet off, right? And he hands Tennessee 15 yards and makes them believe that they have a chance now. How important has it been to stay away from the dumb stuff?
Yeah, I think that's huge. And I think when you look at, the Michigan game, for example, when you have a holding penalty on the opening kickoff, then you end up with a holding penalty the next play on the offensive line, and you find yourself, you've got Blake Gillikin punting out of the back of the end zone, and certainly to his credit, he goes 61 yards, and Jabril Peppers does what he does so well. But you find yourself in these situations where you can't afford to have self-inflicted wounds. And I talked to Mike Gesicki a few weeks ago, and he said, we really feel like this offense can do a lot of good things. We just have to get out of our own way at times. And I think when an offensive line, can avoid those holding penalties and can avoid those situations that get you off schedule, that can give you, a first and 15 instead of a second and five or so, I think that's huge on a drive, and especially with an offense that has all the parts and has all the pieces, it just doesn't quite have the consistency that it needs yet. I think any time that you can take out the self-inflicted wounds, you can at least feel better about your chances. And if you lose, you can feel like, at least we didn't get in our own way. The other team was better today, or the other team made more plays than we did. But at least, on a drive where we had to get a stop or we had to move the ball, we didn't get in our own way. And I think if you look on the other side of the ball, Marcus Allen's face mask penalty when Minnesota's going to lose a bunch of yards, that looked like the game was going to be over right there, and they go out and make some plays a few plays later. But like you said, when you can get out of your own way, when you can avoid those offensive line penalties, it goes a long way, not only towards your confidence, but just sort of being able to keep drive alive.
Didn't exactly meet my definition of a face mask, by the way. To me, normally you got to grab it, but that's a different topic, different time, I guess. How well did the defense hang in on Saturday?
Oh, I thought they hung in great. And I think if you look across the board, all of these games this season, maybe the Michigan game aside, the defense has come out in the second half and they've adjusted, they've made plays. And I think, it's a credit to Brent Pry, it's a credit to those players, because a lot of these guys are playing, far more football than they probably ever thought they were going to play this year. They're playing, some of them are playing out of position. Some of these guys are coming in because another guy gets hurt three plays before. And hello, welcome to Big Ten football. And it's one of those things where, for as many of the correctable issues that this defense has at times, being able to tackle better, staying, with your gap and what have you, I think, their ability to go out and make those stops, to make those key interceptions in the end zone, to really just, find a way to sort of band together and fight it out, I think that's, it's an admirable trait. I think it would be one thing if these guys, were all of the starters we expected at the beginning of the year to be out there, if all three of the starting linebackers are playing and they were not playing well. But I think that these guys can come out and kind of survive the roller coaster and have good second halves and have moments in the first half that they have to make. It's impressive, and to their credit, they found a way to win some of these games and come back into these games, because I think for as much, you look at the Pitt game, as much as everybody talks about the offense scoring a lot of points, Penn State's defense went out in the second half there and played about as good as that unit can in the situation that they were in. So I think it's definitely a group effort to be able to do that.
A team doesn't have a lot of seniors. What does it say about the fact that in that game, Evan Schwann and Jordan Smith were two guys that stepped up and made some plays?
Oh, that's huge. I mean, you have to have senior leadership, and there's a lot of guys on this team, obviously, that are looked at as leaders. Barkley is a guy that obviously everyone leans on, but he's only a sophomore. But I think when you've got guys that have seen a lot, that have been through a lot, I talked to Jordan Smith and Evan Schwann both after the game about when they were around when Bill O'Brien was here, and about the bunch of fighters and all of that, and they sort of reminisced that's the sort of thing that you have to be, that you have to go out there and fight. And these guys, I think for as much as your underclassmen can be role players and be key cogs in your offense and your defense, I think when you've got guys that have seen everything, that have been through everything, They can touch on, you know, experiences that they've had that these other guys haven't, and to have them go out, to have them be healthy, and to have them make big plays. You know, Schwann sack in overtime, and then the interception in the end zone, those sorts of things. You know, that's really something that you can lean on, and the sort of experiences and plays that you can only get ultimately from veteran players.
What do you know about Maryland? I mean, they're 4-0, but what do you know about them?
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of a weird team. I actually, you know, not to name drop, I got a random DM on Twitter yesterday from Scott Van Pelt, who's obviously a big Maryland guy, and he's like, yeah, this is a really weird team. You know, they've got a lot of running backs. They're scoring a lot of points, but at the same time, they haven't really beat anyone. But, you know, Penn State's defense is in a situation where, you know, bless their heart for trying. You know, there's only so much they can do at times, and I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if they can slow down an offense that scored 50 points twice this year. It's put a lot of points up on the board in other games, but at the same time, you know, they haven't lost, but they also haven't really had a great test up until this point. You can say beating Purdue maybe at least counts for something because they're a Big Ten opponent, but, you know, Purdue at any given moment is probably not the most threatening team that you're going to play. So it's going to be a weird game, I think, but I think any time that you have regional rivals, you've got teams that, you know, maybe don't, that they know each other pretty well, personally, from all being from the same sort of neck of the woods, I think those sorts of things, you know, all the things you've done before go out the window, and you just have this sort of, you know, all the cards are on the table. So they're a weird team, but at the same time, I think they're a good test for the Penn State squad.
Oh, no, I think it's a great test for them. I know that they had the one game with Central Florida that went to overtime, which was certainly an intriguing game, but I mean, it's just, you know, you can only play what's in front of you. And obviously, Hill seems to be doing things with much greater efficiency as a quarterback than he did last year when he threw a lot of interceptions. This year, he's thrown only one. What does a running quarterback, because he can run, you know, how much more pressure does that put on the Penn State defense?
Oh, it's a lot more, and I think it comes down to some of the issues that they've had this season in terms of, you know, staying in your gap, staying with your assignments, because I think some of these guys, some of the younger guys, you know, you want to go in there and you want to make a play that you've seen guys make, but, you know, at the end of the day, you have to learn that, you know, not everyone is Austin Johnson, not everyone is Carl Nassib, and sometimes you can't get away with the overcommitment or trying to make a play all on your own. And I think Hills, like you said, he's done a great job sort of transforming from the guy that he was last year that seemed turnover prone to really having some really good offensive numbers. And, you know, between him and Ty Johnson, you've got two guys that can run the ball. And when you have a quarterback that is mobile, I think you look, you know, what Trace McSorley's done this year and what he did in the last game, when you spread out a defense, when you run everybody down the field, it opens up some lanes for a quarterback to run. And Hills is certainly a guy who's not afraid to do that. And I think if Penn State doesn't stay disciplined on that side of the ball, you know, he's the kind of guy that's going to be able to go out there and gash you for some chunk plays. And that's really been one of the things that Penn State's defense has struggled with. They can get you stopped on first and second down, but, you know, they can't, you know, give up that 15-yard third and eight that keeps the chains moving, especially with these guys who are trying to stay healthy, trying to stay with high energy and trying to get off the field.
Yeah, because, I mean, between Ty Johnson and Lorenzo Harrison and Trey Edmonds, and now they add Wes Brown back into it. I mean, they do come at you with a series of running backs. So what are some things that you'll be looking for on Saturday that shows even more growth?
I think it's going to be, you know, what can they do to contain Perry Hills? You know, I think he's going to be able to throw the ball. He's going to be able to run with it, but I think it comes down to, are you able to keep him in check? And I think it's going to be a good test for Penn State defensive front because, like you said, they've got four guys that have over 100 yards rushing. Ty Johnson and Lorenzo are the two guys that sort of get the majority of those carries. But Trey Edmonds has got 23. Kenneth Glenn Jr. has got 14. But they both got, you know, above 5 yards per carry averages. So to be able to get that defensive front to sort of stay stout and stay strong, and I think you saw the last game they had a better push up front and got into the backfield more than maybe the sack total would lead you to believe. But I think if, you know, they can win that battle in the trenches, I think Penn State's offense will be fine. I think they're finding their stride again. I think the Michigan game was ultimately sort of just the result of Michigan just being an exceptionally good football team. So this comes down to defense, and that, I think that's going to be the theme and has been the theme all year for Penn State. So if you can win the battle in the trenches, if Grant Haley's back and healthy, if Marcus Allen can have another game like he did last week, you know, I think Penn State's got a shot in this, but like you said, when you just keep rolling out running backs and keep running guys down your throat, everybody's fresh and you're not really fresh. So it comes down to, can you get in the backfield? Can you get off the field? And can you prevent long drives?
Ben, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Ben Jones, staycollege.com. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Next hour will be open at 1-800-795-9565. Take your calls. Or thanks to Ben Jones, staycollege.com. You know what I've... the month of September was a month where I had a lot going on during the week between Spike's playoff games. There were a few speeches I had to make and things like that. For example, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, even last week, I made a speech to the Pennsylvania Petroleum Association. I had to do the State of Excellence on Thursday night, and there was a meeting with a couple of terrific people that happened to be donors on Friday night. I mean, so my opportunity, you know, in a road trip to Michigan and driving to Pitt and driving back and so forth, I haven't really watched a lot of football so far this year. That's my point. And it's not a complaint. I'm just using this to preface what I'm about to say. I finally got a chance to watch a lot of football this weekend. Boy, there sure is a lot of dumb football being played. Wow. I mean, I watched the Giants game last night. Odell Beckham, reel it in. Okay, play ball. Go over it. See that guy wearing 10 who's won two Super Bowl MVPs? I'd discuss a couple of things with him if I were, you know, just me. He's been around the block. I'd like to see what he'd like to do here. But you look at, you know, certain situations, clock running down, no timeouts. They're dumping the ball over the middle. Clock keeps running. Cowboys-Giants game. Why is it every fan in the stands knows that Williams needs to get out of bounds and stop the clock, except for Williams, who cuts it to the inside? Really? Okay, what's the single most important play in the Georgia-Tennessee game? It's not the Hail Mary pass to win it. It's the Georgia touchdown pass to put him in front. Why? Because he takes his helmet off. And he hands on a silver platter 15 yards to Tennessee, which suddenly gives them hope that they can put themselves in a position to win. What are we watching here? I think it's one of the reasons that football ratings are not what they were a couple years ago, because these teams aren't playing smart football, and fans aren't dumb. They know it. I mean, just my thought. I don't know what you've watched, but I don't feel like I'm watching people who are bringing a high level of intelligence to the game.
I think there's a lot of problems with time management. Like you said, last night, throwing a 5-yard pass with literally seconds left on the clock to try and get a score was absolutely silly, to put it mildly. Silly.
I mean, why? And not only that, money enters into it. Explain to me why Robbie Gould's not kicking for the Bears. It's all about cash.
It's $4 million is why he's not kicking. They signed the guy for under $1 million to replace a guy making $4 million.
Yeah, but isn't the object to win? Bears are making millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars. The Bears are making tons of money. If the object is to win, he's my kicker.
Yeah, there's no question he's the kicker.
mean, that's what I mean. I see so many questionable moves where you just sit back and shake your head and say, do these, I mean, you have one job all week.
Isn't it like Casey Stengel once said about his New York Mets? Can anybody here play this game?
Right, exactly. Look, I can understand youth. I can understand inexperience, overcoming mistakes. Everybody has to do that in every business. But you work and drill these things every single day. And I watched a weekend where I just sat back and shook my head and said to myself, why are they playing this way?
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.